him, and if he learns from another source what's going on, he's going to want to know why I didn't brief him.
If told he is that I requested your silence, no action against you will the Supreme Chancellor take,
Yoda said firmly.
Understand, he does, that precedence the Jedi have in matters like this.
Your support is always welcome, Master Yoda. I hope you know that, but in this case I'm not certain it would help. Palpatine has to believe he can trust me. The moment I lose his trust, I'll lose my position, and at the risk of sounding arrogant, I think it's vital that I stay where I am doing my job.
Arrogant you are not, Senator,
said Yoda, with another rap of his gimmer stick on the parquetry floor.
Without doubt, you are needed.
Sighing heavily, he rubbed his chin.
When heard from Obi-Wan we have, and when told us Dr. Netzel has, whether or not an antidote for Durd's bioweapon he can create, then to Supreme Chancellor Palpatine we will go.
And when he demands an explanation for why we didn't tell him any of this sooner?
Remind him, we will, that closely is he watched by our Republic's enemies,
said Yoda, his eyes narrowed.
Sense hidden truths they can. Therefore, silent we remained on this new threat.
As explanations went, it sounded plausible. Now if only he thought Palpatine would buy it. Even if he does accept our reasoning, he'll be furious. You do know that. Yoda shrugged, supremely indifferent.
Care for his anger, should I, when countless lives we seek to save, hmm?
No, Master, of course not.
Then care will I not, Senator.
The merest glimmer of a smile.
And neither should you.
Mostly reassured, Bail took his leave of Yoda and returned to the Senate. Three floors of the enormous complex were given over to courtesy offices for visiting government officials. That was where he found Padme, and joined her to compare facts and figures for the pre-vote debate.
Except I'll be voting by proxy,
she said, passing him her preliminary assessment and taking his to read in return.
Queen Jamilia's asked me to meditate a dispute between Naboo's Artisans Guild and the Bonadan Silver Sand Consortium. They've raised their prices again, and the glassblowers are about ready to declare war.
Tapping his fingers on her data pad, Bail frowned. You know, I'm starting to think belligerence is contagious. Padme gave him a brief, half-hearted smile.
And I'm starting to agree with you.
She was looking tired. The severity of her midnight blue gown and sleeked-back hair only accentuated her pallor. Shadows darkened the delicate skin beneath her eyes and the hollows of her cheeks. She was fretting herself to an unhealthy slenderness, and there was nothing he could do to help. Moments after starting to scroll through his data pad of notes, she hesitated, then hit the pad's pause function.
There's no news?
No. I'd have told you if there was.
Of course you would, she said, recoiling. I'm sorry.
Instantly contrite, Bail touched his fingers to her arm.
No, I'm sorry. They'll be fine, she said, all her vulnerability ruthlessly repressed. They're gifted, experienced Jedi. They'll be fine.
Oh, Padme, from your lips to the ears of any god or goddess who might be listening, from your lips to their mysterious force. Not long after that, she left her proxy vote with him, and went to wrestle with the Artisans and the Silver Sand Consortium. With his own mind made up, Bail snatched a hasty meal in the busy senatorial dining room, where he was joined by Mon Mothma, the quietly elegant co-representative for the Bormea sector. Beneath her habitual cool poise, she seemed almost agitated.
Forgive me for disturbing you, Bail. Do you have a moment?
He didn't know her well, but what he did know he liked very much. Of course, Mon. Please, sit. She slid into the other chair at his table and folded her slender hands before her.
Umgul, she said, keeping her voice low. A whisper's just reached me that its ruling council is being wooed by Count Dooku. Now, I realize that strategically the planet has little value, but...
But as a morale booster for the war-weary, and a potential lightning rod for the increasing unrest over Palpatine's recent tax hikes... Umgul was way more valuable than he wanted to think about right now. He pushed his plate aside. How reliable is your whisper?
Reliable enough,
Mon Mothma said somberly.
Look, I don't mean to tell you your business, Bail. You're the security expert, not me. Only, I'm thinking...
What I'm thinking, he said. But I can't see the Chancellor repealing the new taxes. War is expensive and we need the money. To be honest, I don't... A gentle chiming sounded through the dining room, the first of three warnings that the next Senate session was due to begin. Look, perhaps we can talk about this later, after the vote?
I think we should,
Mon Mothma said as she slid out of her chair.
I think if we don't find a way to keep Umgul from joining the Separatists, we're going to see some very ugly bloodletting.
Pushing back his own chair, Bail stood. I agree. He and Mon Mothma joined the trickle of colleagues leaving the dining room.
And I've got some ideas,
Mon Mothma replied, almost smiling.
But in the meantime, about this ridiculous brawl we're about to vote on?
Tired of moping around the temple, getting nowhere, trying to read the Force, and even more tired of thinking up believable answers to questions she couldn't answer truthfully, Ahsoka registered an absence with the central database and took herself off to the GAR clone barracks, where she was shocked and delighted to find Captain Rex and Sergeant Korik returned only an hour before from the Kaleida Shoals Med Center.
Nobody told me you'd been discharged, she said, beaming. Why didn't anyone tell me you were being discharged?
Sprawled in Torrent Company's home base barracks rec room, wearing black fatigues and a satisfied smile, Rex shrugged one shoulder.
Don't look at me, little'un. I just go where they point me and start shooting when I see the glow of their photoreceptors.
On the long, low couch beside him, Sergeant Korik snickered.
You got that right.
The rec room buzzed with a score of comfortable conversations. Over in one corner, the 501st's newest recruit, Checkers, played turbo darts with Fireball and Zap from Gold Squadron. Laughter sounded as Checkers overshot the dartboard and buried his turbo dart up to its fins in the wall. Rex shook his head.
You know they'll dock you for the repairs, he said,
lifting his voice above the raucous amusement.
Better give up while you're ahead.
I never give up, sir,
Checkers retorted, turning. There was a new scar on his face, the pink line puckered across his chin, keeping company with the old wound under his eye. Either Kaleida Shoals Bacta didn't take, or he hadn't been treated in time. His scalp gleamed intermittently bald under the rec room's bright lights. Since Kothless, he'd shaved it in racing stripes and dyed what was left an eye-searing green. Seeing Ahsoka, he flicked his fingers to his forehead and grinned.
Ma'am?
She grinned back.
Not ma'am. Ahsoka.
Right, right.
He dug in his fatigues pocket and pulled out another turbo dart.
Fancy around, Ahsoka?
In a minute, she said. Keep the darts warm for me.
So, said Rex, his gaze lazily intent as she turned her attention back to him.
What's our general up to?
It was such a simple question, and yet she couldn't answer it. Not only because of security, but because her throat was suddenly closed tight with fear. Rex leaned forward.
Little'un?
I'm sorry, she said, gulping. I can't tell you.
He exchanged glances with Korik.
But he's in trouble.
Mute, she nodded, then realized her hands were clutched tight and sweaty in her lap. Any second now she was going to cry.
Stang! He's been in trouble before, said Korik,
trying to sound a lot more confident than he felt.
He'll get out of it. He always does. He always has,
she corrected him.
But this time...
You know where he is,
said Rex, fiercely frowning. She nodded.
And you, we, can't go in after him.
She shook her head.
Ever?
Said Korik, taken aback.
Or just not yet? I don't know, she whispered. Please, you can't say anything to anyone. This has to stay between us.
Don't worry, said Rex, and dragged a hand down his face. Stang.
Torrent Company was so cheerful. It broke her heart to see them laughing, teasing, roughhousing, as though they didn't have a care in the world. But if they knew what she knew... Rex sat back, pretending he wasn't upset.
What have you seen, Ahsoka? What's the Force showing you?
She was under strict instructions never to discuss how the Force was getting harder and harder to read. She mustn't mention it even to Rex and Korok, whom she trusted with her life. Of course, this once she didn't have to lie. She hadn't seen anything, though she'd nearly passed out trying.
All I get is a feeling,
she said, keeping her voice low, though there was so much noise in the room.
Like I'm about to be sick all the time.
I know that feeling, said Korok, trying to joke. Do you reckon I could be a Jedi too?
Rex stuck an elbow into his ribs.
Some Jedi you'd make. You'd give the other Padawans nightmares.
Now look what you've done, Captain, said Korok, miming heart-struck sorrow. You've gone and hurt my tender feelings.
They were trying to cheer her up, distract her, distract themselves, too. For all they were hard men, seasoned soldiers, not given to softness or sentimentality of any kind, they adored their general. Because she couldn't tell them any more, and because she was so very tired of thinking about it, of worrying about Sky Guy, Ahsoka changed the subject.
So, are you boys on furlough?
Rex nodded.
Don't know for how long. Nobody's told us.
And they knew better than to ask.
We'll take another day or two of R&R, then we'll get back to training while we wait for the next deployment. But if General Skywalker's not back by then...
Ahsoka felt her guts tighten.
I don't know. Nobody tells me anything either.
She nearly added,
And it's not fair.
But caught herself just in time. She had no business whining about not fair to these clones.
Ah, well, little un, said Rex with his most sardonic grin. This is the life, isn't it? This is what we signed up for. Hurry up and wait. Long stretches of boredom punctuated by moments of sheer terror.
Leaning forward again, he patted her on the knee.
So, I say we play darts. What you reckon?
And there was her heart, breaking all over again for love of him. Such a decent man he was. She bounced to her feet, determined not to disappoint him.
I reckon I can take you, Captain Rex.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that,
Rex retorted, a twinkle in his eyes. And then it faded, and he was the serious clone captain again.
But little un, when the time comes, when you and the General need us...
He jerked his thumb at Korok, equally somber by his side.
Just say the word and we'll be there.
She had to wait a moment, swallowing hard.
I know you will, and so does he.
She leapt up.
Now, come along and get thrashed at darts.
Early the next morning, Jedi Master Taria Damson tracked Ahsoka down in the Temple Arboretum, where the grass was cool and moist, and the tumbling waterfall filled the warm air with spray and bright sound. Discreetly inspecting the Jedi Master, Ahsoka thought she seemed perfectly recovered from their wild mission on Corellia. Either Taria was an excellent actress, or her Boritavi syndrome was back under control.
My guess is it's a bit of both.
Ahsoka, said Taria, as cheerful as ever. I've been thinking.
Unfolding from her final meditation pose,
a flower stem bends and does not break in the wind.
Ahsoka treated the older woman to a grin.
Thinking? That's dangerous. Should I be afraid?
Cheeky brat, said Taria.
Now listen, I know you hate that you're stuck here waiting for word from Masters Kenobi and Skywalker.
There's nothing worse than being left behind when your master's off on a mission that doesn't require a Padawan's presence. And the Force knows that after Corellia, my appetite's been whetted for something a little less sedate than research in the library.
So, what do you say we get a nice little competition going? Something to challenge the senior Padawans that'll challenge us at the same time?
That sounds intriguing,
Ahsoka admitted.
What kind of competition?
Taria's tawny eyes were alight with mischief.
A race through the new training dojo. Two teams. We lead one each. First team to light the beacon at the top of the mini-city's central tower wins.
Wins what?
Bragging rights, of course, said Taria, grinning.
What else?
The new training dojo, completed a few days before the mission to Kophlis, took up all of the temple's massive sub-level 19. Tricked out with artificial atmospherics and randomly generated zero-G pockets, terraformed into marshy quagmire, thick foliage, a ravine, a cliff, a stretch of wide-open quake ground, a very small and self-contained river, and four large blocks of streets complete with buildings and towers, it was also populated by a panoply of actual SEP battle droids, salvaged from real battles, which had been modified to shoot stingers instead of blaster bolts. In short, it was the ultimate in urban and natural habitat warfare training terrains. The poor little Padawans were going to get their butts kicked. But better they were kicked in the safety of the temple than out there in the real war, where second chances were rare and dead really meant dead.
So, said Taria, teasingly taunting, are you game?
Say yes. This could be the start of a temple tournament.
It sounds like fun, Ahsoka said slowly. But a tournament means winning and losing, doesn't it? The Jedi philosophy discourages pride.
True, said Taria, her amusement fading.
But this isn't about pride, Ahsoka. It's about finding a way to train without dwelling on what we're training for.
War.
Padawans learn better when they aren't afraid, when they're actually enjoying themselves. That's when the lessons stick.
And that was true, too.
As for me, this might be the perfect thing to take my mind off Sky Guy.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's go get our teens.
20 minutes later, Ahsoka stood outside the dojo with 11 eager senior Padawans. They were the green team. Taria had won the toss, so her blue team had 12. The blues were now their enemy, at least for the next hour or so. Given that this was these Padawans' first time in a war zone, all were wielding training lightsabers designed to stun instead of kill. They wore colored bibs to identify one another too, although the fluctuating light levels and sudden bursts of storming rain would make it tricky to see anything clearly. Green team entered the dojo first, its consolation prize for losing the toss. Ahsoka's Padawans were entirely trusting and alarmingly impressed because she was Anakin Skywalker's apprentice and knew the best clone soldiers by nickname and had crossed lightsabers with the likes of a Sage Ventress and lived to tell the tale.
Hey, Sky Guy, don't let me mess this up.
Right, she said, raising her voice over the dojo's first computer-generated cracks of lightning and howls of wind.
Focus on the objective, people. Reaching the tallest tower in the center of the mini-city and lighting its beacon. That means you keep your eyes peeled, and if you get into trouble, then you rely on the Force. And each other. Understood?
Understood!
The Padawans shouted. The rules only gave them a 3-minute head start on the Blues. Since the opening terrain was the dreaded quake ground, it was time to get cracking. First of all, though, she had to inspire her team. Captain Rex's Hints for Leaders number 4.
If they think you're having fun, they might forget to be terrified.
Spinning to face her Padawans, walking backward without missing a stride, Ahsoka smiled at the youngsters closest to her. Chivas and Tobrugni smiled back, two small peas in a kawati pod, the glow of their ignited training lightsabers reflecting in their wide, excited eyes.
There's an old Hutt saying, she told her green team, as beneath their feet the treacherous quake ground woke and shivered a warning. And it goes like this. Undaliki aigoto aigoto gruta!
A moment's startled silence, and then the green team shouted back.
Undaliki aigoto aigoto gruta!
Then the game began, and Ahsoka forgot that none of this was real. Long since blooded in battle, she couldn't think that way anymore.
Christophsis, Teth, Meridun, Kaleida Shoals, Bothawi, Kothless.
Memories of each encounter rose to drown her, and instead of fighting them, she let herself sink beneath their hot red surface. What she'd learned in the real war could help her now, could help these Padawans. It might even make the difference between life and death for them one day. And she owed it to Anakin to train them as well as he trained her.
With Taria's blue team coming close on their heels, the most important thing was to find cover before they ran into any set droids. The green team staggered and fell and rolled across the heaving quake ground, then pounded into the dojo's thick foliage as a hard, driving rain began to fall. That was where the first wave of mosquito droids found them. Relentlessly, they harried the Padawans, whose excitement swiftly turned to uncertainty and confusion as the rain flogged them and the quake ground unbalanced them and more mosquito droids came in hard and blasting. Fiercely focused, remembering Kothless, Ahsoka led the attack, shouting encouragement and instructions to her stunned, faltering team. They rallied quickly. Amazingly, she lost only one. Crushed with disappointment, downed Lak-Sha'atz waved them a forlorn goodbye as the Greens zapped the last mosquito droid and pushed on to the river. A detachment of battle droids waited for them on its far bank. Proudly, Ahsoka watched three Padawans take the initiative by felling a tree and rolling it into the water. Instinctively responsive, the rest of Green Team formed up to give them cover. The dojo's damp air spat and sizzled as volley after volley of stinger bolts were deflected, knocking all but three of the battle droids out of the game. They lost to Boor in that engagement, but the rest of the Greens stayed safe using the tree trunk for cover as they half-waded, half-swam across. When they reached the river's other side, Ahsoka took out one of the remaining droids and Chivas the other two.
"Good job, Greens!" she said, grinning, and waved her team on toward the ravine.
Feeling a familiar stirring in the force, she looked around and saw Taria leading the Blues toward them in a furious charge. "Whoops," she said, and chased after her team. After that, they lost sight of their opponents, but they could hear distant blaster shots and the buzzing whine of lightsabers, even though the atmospherics program was enthusiastically deluging them with another storm. Somebody was keeping the blue team busy. And then they forgot about everything but their own survival, because staff-riding battle droids were swooping in for an attack as they stumbled across a treacherous pocket of zero-G, which shut off when they were some 5 meters above the ground. Avoiding the droids and riding the force to a safe landing got a bit messy. They lost the Mon Cal Padawan Bagro in that engagement. Using the force and the strength of their newly forged bond, the Green Team Padawans fought their way down the dojo's steep ravine and up the other side through another cloud of mosquito droids, and then faced the daunting cliff. More droids on staffs threatened them there. Breathless, determined, Ahsoka drew on every lesson Anakin had ever taught her to lead her team. Too busy now to be scared for him, instead, she leaned on him even though he was so far away.
"See, Sky Guy, I was paying attention."
But even so, by the time they reached the first recreated city street, Green Team's numbers had dwindled from 11 to 4, not counting herself.
"Come on,"
she told the remaining Padawans, remembering Rex's hint number 6.
"The worse things get, the more confident you need to look."
"This is the last stretch. We can do this. We can win."
What was left of the exhausted Green Team rewarded her with straightened spines and renewed determination. She smiled at them.
"This must be what it feels like to be Anakin."
And then, the narrow street was full of droidicas and battle droids, and they were desperately scrambling to survive. Sprinting through puddles, leaving crumpled ground cars and artfully scattered piles of rubble, diving through open windows and rolling across splintered floors to dive back outside again, deflecting blaster bolts left and right, they gave themselves over to the madness of urban battle. The Greens lost another two team members to droids in the last desperate push to reach the tower and its beacon ahead of the Blues. Taria's team had taken its own route into the city and was racing to take the prize at its center. The teams reached the tower at the same time.
"Go on!"
Ahsoka shouted to Chivas and Vanika, her last two Padawans.
"That beacon isn't going to light itself!"
Breathing hard, aware of sore muscles and scrapes and bruises, she watched the Padawan scale the tower's external wall. Taria had three blue team members still standing. They took off after the Greens, leaving Taria to cheer them on. Ahsoka looked the older Jedi over. Slushed with muck from the quagmire the Greens had managed to avoid, Taria was scraped and bruised too, with several rips in her sedate, dark gray bodysuit. After what had happened rescuing the scientist's mother,
Probably she shouldn't be taking part in this game. But Master Danson was a stubborn law unto herself.
I'm fine, Ahsoka, Taria said, not shifting her gaze from the race up the tower. So you can stop looking at me like... Oh, Stang!
One of the blues had misjudged a handhold and was tumbling not very tidily to the street below. Her command of the force to cushion the fall proved far from perfect.
Sorry, Michka, said Taria to the winded Padawan. I think that has to count as dead.
The Padawan groaned and let her yellow-scaled head thud to the ground. Ahsoka stared again at the tower where two greens and two blues were scrambling to the top with a lot more enthusiasm than finesse. She couldn't help smiling.
You were right, Taria. This is an excellent way for Padawans to learn.
And what have you learned?
Me?
She said, surprised.
Oh, right. I'm still a Padawan, too.
She thought of Anakin.
That nothing's ever as easy as it looks.
Taria smiled.
Don't worry, Ahsoka. No matter who wins this, you haven't let your master down.
The lurking unease she'd managed to outrun came surging back.
Taria.
She felt her breathing hitch.
Say it. Say it. You know you have to say it. I've got a bad feeling about Master Skywalker.
Taria's greenish-blue hair, stuck through with twigs and unraveling from its long braid, caught the flickering streetlights and shone like living ice. For the first time since they'd entered the dojo, Ahsoka saw a hint of discomfort in her eyes as her terrible illness made itself felt. Atop the tower, the Padawans reached the competition beacon together and ignited it together with loud, triumphant hollering. A tie. Applauding their effort, Taria slid her tawny, topaz gaze sideways.
I've got one, too, about Master Kenobi.
Oh, Ahsoka swallowed.
Really? And what does that mean?
Taria snorted.
You're too smart for a question like that, Ahsoka. You know as well as I do what it means.
She did. Oh, she did.
Sky Guy, where are you? What's going on?
Chapter 4 Anakin sat up, shifting between heartbeats from deep sleep to waking. Even as he looked around his unfamiliar surroundings, a storeroom, its walls lined with prefab Durasteel shelves not even a quarter filled with cans and boxes, he could feel his senses unfurl and test the cool, dry air for danger. Nothing. At least nothing immediate. Only the same clouding anxiety and tension he and Obi-Wan had felt as they approached the village. And he sensed Teba Jacklin, the woman who'd warily given them permission to enter the village, brought them back here to her home, and offered them tea and soup and rough beds on her floor. Vaguely, he remembered drinking something bitter, swallowing some kind of gritty gruel, then afterward, falling face down on this thin mattress, and then lights out. So, look on the bright side, General Skywalker, and don't forget that things can always be worse. Obi-Wan sprawled in a sleeping heap next to him, his breathing soft and regular. No cause for concern there, even though dried blood discolored his beard and his face was marred by cuts, scrapes, and bruises. Slivers of shadow striped him where the light from the new day slid between the warped shutters, covering the storeroom's single small window. The new day. Going by Lantiban time, that meant they'd slept without stirring for nearly 20 local hours. The good news was he definitely felt refreshed. The bad news, there always had to be bad news, was that his empty belly rumbling like a rock slide? With luck, there'd be breakfast.
But we can't stay here after that. We have to get back in the fight, so the question is, what's next?
Obi-Wan opened his eyes.
Well, how are your bruised bruises this morning?
Surly, Anakin said. Yours?
I'll live.
And so would he, but not comfortably. Everything hurt. And in the unfortunate absence of pain meds...
Hey, don't suppose you could...
Sorry, said Obi-Wan, sounding genuinely regretful.
Miraculous overnight healing is likely to raise eyebrows. Wincing, he threw back his blanket and rolled untidily to his feet. Never mind, we'll manage. Now, what are your impressions of this village? Anakin watched Obi-Wan tug the window's shutter aside and stare through the scratched and warped transparasteel at the dwellings beyond. They were even more dilapidated than Gardula the Hutt's Mos Espa slave quarter, where he and his mother had lived before being sold to Watto. Small, featureless boxes with flat roofs and shuttered windows. No grass to soften the hard ground, or flowers to give even the illusion of cheer. What a sad place this was. But despite its sunken, sun-baked sorrow, "I think we're fine," he said. "At least for the moment. Obi-Wan, we have to get a message to the temple." "You're reading my mind," said Obi-Wan, nodding. "With the mine active and supplying Damatite, the village must possess some kind of comm center. The question is, will they let us use it?" He shrugged. "Probably not. So I say we don't even bother asking. We can just..." Prompted by muffled footsteps outside the storeroom door, Obi-Wan turned. "It appears our hostess is up and about. I suggest we go and make friends. We'll need her support while we're here." "And if we don't get it?" said Anakin, slowly getting up off his mattress. His scrapes and bruises really were surly. "What then? You try a little gentle persuasion?" "I'm not certain that would work," Obi-Wan said at last. "This Teba has a very definite personality. If she's unprepared to offer further hospitality, we'll have to see if someone else will take us in. And if that doesn't work, then we'll simply have to find another settlement where the natives are friendlier. Except we're in the middle of nowhere already, and I can't sense another village anywhere close by. Can you?" Obi-Wan grimaced. "Right now, I can't sense much beyond the need for a fresher." "Good point." His own unhappy body was making urgent demands, too. With elaborate courtesy, he opened the storeroom door and stood back. "After you, Cousin Yavid." They found Teba Jacqueline in her small kitchen, slicing a rough loaf of mixed grain bread. Putting the knife down, she considered them with her wary, pale blue gaze.
"So, there you are. I was beginning to wonder if you'd died."
Her demeanor was odd, not hostile, but not exactly friendly either. More than anything, Anakin sensed a resigned resentment in the woman, as though their arrival on her doorstep was just one more burden in a long and disappointing lifetime of burdens. Undaunted, Obi-Wan pressed his hand to his heart and offered her his most polite bow. "We certainly slept like the dead, Teba. Again, you have our most humble thanks. I think my cousin and I were ready to lie down in the road." From the look on her face, the Teba wasn't sure whether to believe him. She sniffed.
"I think you were too, Teb. But likely you'd have been safe enough. There's no convoy due for a few days yet. Still..."
She wrapped the remaining uncut bread in a cloth and dropped it into a bin on the bench.
"Better safe than sorry."
"Indeed," said Obi-Wan.
Teba..."
She pointed through the kitchen's other door.
"The fresher's down the corridor there. Can't offer you the tub today, no body bathing till tomorrow."
Anakin swallowed a groan. His skin was tacky with dried sweat and blood and grime.
"We might as well be back on Tatooine."
"Your water's rationed?"
"That's right," she said, indifferent to his dismay.
"First, second, and third priorities are mine. Then beasts and crops and drinking. Washing bodies and clothes comes a long way last."
"That's quite all right, Teba Jacqueline," Obi-Wan said quickly. "You've given us shelter and sustenance. We don't expect you to launder us as well."
Teba Jacqueline stared at Obi-Wan, steadfastly refusing to be softened by his charm.
"You get a splash of wet in the bottom of the fresher basin for the worst of the stink. No more than a splash, mind, I'll know otherwise. There's a gauge."
"A splash," said Obi-Wan.
"Yes, of course."
She frowned at his cuts and bruises.
"Not brawling each other, were you? We don't hold with brawling here."
"No, Teba," said Obi-Wan.
"As we said last night, there was an accident. We're not troubled, my word on it." "In that case, there's a pot of salve in the cupboard over the basin. Use what you need of it. I make it myself."
Obi-Wan bowed again.
"That's very generous, thank you."
Markle, you go first, but don't dawdle.
I won't, Yavid, Anakin murmured, the obedient younger cousin, and left Obi-Wan to his closer reading of the Teeba and their current predicament. Like the dingy, cramped kitchen, the cottage's refresher was run down and hardly big enough to turn around in. As he washed his flesh-and-bone hand and his face at the tiny basin, using no more than the requisite miserly splash, he stared at his wobbly reflection in the cracked mirror. Could be worse. A thin cut along his hairline, bruising along his left cheekbone and under his eye. A scrape on his chin. Tugging his shirt open, he counted more bruises. His right collarbone ached viciously, as did two of his ribs and both knees. Perhaps it was for the best that the tub was denied him. He had the feeling he was a patchwork of purple and green bruises and red blaster blisters, which would make for a depressing sight. Still, if looking awful makes us seem less threatening, more vulnerable, that's all to the good. He daubed himself liberally with Teeba Jacklin's stinking, sticky green salve. It stung like fire. Then he returned to the kitchen. Upon his arrival, Obi-Wan withdrew, leaving him alone with their hostess. Obi-Wan's right. Her mind is about as pliable as Durasteel. Whatever we need from her, we'll have to get with old-fashioned cajolery. And hadn't his mother always told him he could coax the stars down from the sky if he put himself to the trouble? Didn't Padme say the same, not always so admiringly? He offered the plain, tough woman his most winsome, winning smile.
Thank you, Teeba Jacklin. It's very good of you to help us like this. If we hadn't come across your village when we did, or if you'd turned us away as vagabonds, I'm not sure how we would have survived.
With an unimpressed glance, the Teeba fired up her kitchen's clunky old stove.
We keep ourselves to ourselves and Torbell, young Teeb, but that don't make us cruel. I took you in for it was the right thing to do. And the right thing for us to do is be grateful for it, he replied, meaning it. Kindness isn't found everywhere, Teeba Jacklin.
She hesitated, then shook her head.
No, it's not. Have you lived here all your life?
No, she said, fiddling with the stove's knobs.
21 seasons. Came here with my man. He died a minor, I stayed. Took to teaching.
Behind her laconic reply, Anakin sensed an aching well of memory, and was sharply reminded of Bantina Fernan. This was turning into a mission overrun by sad women. Or maybe it's just that nobody anywhere can truly call themselves happy.
21 seasons in the same place, he said, to fill the silence. Hard to imagine. It's almost longer than I've been alive.
She sniffed again.
Practically a boy, you are.
He watched her place two slices of bread on the compact cooktop grill. Beneath her reserve and her sorrow, she remained wary, watching him from the corner of her eye as she toasted the bread.
This isn't going to work if we can't get her to trust us. Can I do something to help, Teeba? Eggs in the cupboard there, she said over her shoulder. Know how to whip eggs, do you?
The question woke memories. Sharing kitchen time and laughter and dreams with his mother. Fetching pots, measuring agra flour, slicing dried otith when he was old enough for her to trust with a knife.
Family. Real family, not the oddly separate togetherness of the temple. Yes, Teeba. How many? All you find in the bowl. Forks in the drawer. Cracked shells go in the cycler.
After emptying the raw eggs into the bowl and disposing of the shells, he started beating the pink yolks and whites together.
Teeba, is this right?
Another disparaging sniff.
Thought you said you knew whipping eggs.
But she looked into the bowl and gave him a small approving nod.
Right enough.
The toasting bread smelled good. His stomach rumbled again loudly.
Sorry,
he said, seeing the woman's eyebrows lift.
Good appetite. That's enough with the eggs, she said, exchanging toasted bread for fresh. You can set them aside and put plates on the table, for there's someone coming.
Laying places at the table, Anakin looked around the kitchen. The only splash of color was a handful of flowers on the windowsill. Otherwise, he got no sense of the woman who lived here. As a rule,
He never had any trouble reading people. But this Teba Jacqueline, wary and sad, that was it. And that's not very much when we're risking our lives.
As he finished setting knives and forks to go with the plates on the battered old table, Obi-Wan returned with his hair slicked wet and no dried blood in his beard. A tiny nod as their eyes met, and a casual flick of his fingers. Obi-Wan code for nothing untoward in the rest of the house. He'd done his own dawdling to make sure of their safety. Nobody did cautious like Master Kenobi.
Teba Jacqueline turned off the grill and fired up the stove's two small hot plates.
"You, Teeb Yavid," she said briskly. "Pull the butter and nut paste from the cool box and put the crisp bread on the table."
"Of course," said Obi-Wan. "Anything else?"
Their hostess wore the same brown tunic, trousers, and boots, but her gray hair was caught in a blue scarf this morning. Jacqueline tucked a loosened wisp back into confinement and shook her head.
"No. Not a man born can make tea or cook eggs in any proper fashion."
Swallowing a smile, Obi-Wan did as he was told.
"There's an extra place set, Teba."
"Good to know you're not blind,"
she said, setting a kettle of water to boil.
"Two of us oversee Torbell Village, me and Teeb Ricard, the head miner. It's a need to assay you, Teebs. It's true you've not murdered me under me own roof, but these are sideways-looking times. You'll not complain."
Anakin exchanged another look with Obi-Wan. "No, I'm pretty sure we won't."
"How many live here in Torbell, Teba Jacqueline?"
She had a pan on the stove now, with oil poured into it and starting to spit. Holding the bowl of frothy, pinkish eggs ready to pour, Teba Jacqueline flicked him a glance.
437. There was twice that and more in the old Damatite days. With production stepped up again, we might see us grow a bit. New times are here on Lanteeb, but what they've brung us."
She shrugged, then poured the eggs into the hot pan.
"We'll see."
"What they've brung you, Teba, is more misery. In fact, if he and Obi-Wan were successful here, they'd be leaving this woman to a cruel and uncertain future. But he couldn't tell her that. Indeed, after the disaster that was Bantina, he wasn't even tempted. Obi-Wan was right. Getting caught up in these transitory people's lives was a mistake.
We're Jedi. We need to take a longer view, focus on the big picture, and not get lost in the small details."
He felt a stir in the Force, and a moment later heard banging on the cottage's front door. Danger? No, they were still safe.
"That'll be Ricard," said Teba Jacqueline. "You'll mind your manners, Teebs. He's a good man and brave one, and his word in Torbell is weighty."
She slid the eggs off the stove and left the kitchen. Anakin rolled his eyes. "She makes Master Yoda look cuddly, but I don't sense she's a threat," he murmured. "I just wish I could tell how far she'll go to help us. Can you?"
"No," said Obi-Wan. "All I can say for certain is that events are in flux. Perhaps that's why..."
Teba Jacqueline returned with a lanky man in tow. Dressed like their hostess, his close-cropped head was roped and crisscrossed with livid scars. His right eye drooped half-closed, and more scar tissue marred his hookish nose.
"This is Teeb Ricard," she announced. "Ricard, here's these men I spoke of. The beard is Teeb Yavid, the youth is Teeb Markle, cousins from distant Voteb."
Teeb Ricard looked to be somewhere in his middle years.
"A ground car accident brings you here, says Jacqueline,"
he remarked. He had a deep voice, almost lazy, but his brown eyes were sharp.
"For sure, Teebs, you look to be sore and sorry, with no fancy doctrine in Torbell. Are you fetching to die?"
"Not if we can help it, Teeb Ricard," said Obi-Wan, smiling, easing his innate aura of authority so that this man, a village leader, would not feel threatened.
"We've already put you to trouble enough, haven't we, Markle?"
Anakin bobbed his head.
"Humble, humble, keep it humble."
"Yes, we have, Yavid. We're very lucky." "You can talk sitting just like standing," said Teba Jacqueline. "There's tea to brew, then I'll dish the eggs."
At the first mouthful of fried egg, Anakin nearly gagged, then flinched as Obi-Wan kicked his shin.
Courageously taking his second swallow, he thought longingly of the last meal he'd sat down to outside a temple dining hall. Not only had Padme been there, his best beloved, but Bail Organa could actually cook. "Don't be sick. They won't let you use the comm if you vomit."
"Your speech has lost the touch of Lantib," said Teeb Ricard, spooning down the dreadful eggs as though this were a Senate banquet. "And Teban men aren't for beards."
If Obi-Wan was struggling with their breakfast, it didn't show. Swallowing another mouthful, he nodded.
"We've been away these 3 years, gone Teeb. Away to Alderaan for to make our fortune."
And just like that, he had a proper Lantiban cadence. Anakin washed down his envy with a scouring mouthful of hot tea. Sometimes he thought his former master was part Claudite, a changeling who could become anything or anyone just by wishing.
"Alderaan," said Teeb Ricard, his ropey scars shining in the light through the window. "They let aliens roam free there, I've heard tell. All manner of creatures pretending to be proper men."
Anakin gave up on the eggs and took a slice of dry toast instead, left it dry, deciding not to risk the butter or nut paste.
"We kept ourselves to ourselves, Teeb."
Teba Jacqueline sat back in her chair, brooding over her mug of tea.
"Doing what? I've never met a Lantib youth wanted to rub clean skin with slimy alien-eyed."
He felt his blood leap.
"Don't. They've lived their whole lives here. This is all they know."
"Lumber, it was good money. We lost our farm to the Plough Comet drought."
"Ah," said Ricard, and his careful gaze warmed a little with sympathy. "The Plough Comet brought misery hanging on its tail for sure. A trickle of bad for Lantib turned to gushing, thanks to the Plough."
"That's true," said Obi-Wan, his voice artfully close to breaking. "It dried up Voteb and all its farms like salt. So you see, Teeba Jacqueline, for me and Markle it was Alderaan or starve, and we had no want to starve."
Lightly, he punched a fist to his chest.
"Don't give us a harsh eye. We're home again now, which is where we belong."
As Jacqueline closed her lips tight, Ricard scratched the scar on his nose.
"Home after 3 years. You'll see a change."
"They said to us in a spaceport Lantib's joined the Confederacy," said Obi-Wan, his eyes wide as though he found such a notion impossible to understand. "And now the Republic's our enemy."
"That's politics," said Teeba Jacqueline. "Not for my kitchen. Teeb Markle, you've done with those eggs. You've not eaten half. You had an appetite. What happened to it?"
Yes, Anakin said after a moment. "Sorry, the ground car tumble we took seems I'm a bit addled, Teeba Jacqueline."
"You're a lummox to be addled," she said,
and took the plate for herself.
"Food's rationed here like the water. You come up hungry an hour from now, you'll not be moaning to me."
"Of course not," he mumbled.
This time, Obi-Wan trod on his foot, his message perfectly clear.
"Shut up, for pity's sake, before you shove us out in the street."
"It's a fine breakfast, Teeba Jacqueline. We're sitting here most grateful."
"Where did you tumble your ground car, Teeb Yavid?"
said Ricard, his own plate empty.
"We've good men and better tools in Tor-Bel. Fixing machines is a thing we do here."
Obi-Wan shook his head, regretful.
"The ground car's not for fixing, Teeb. Bought sloppy, we did. Young Markle here acted without thought. The engine ran wild on us in the dark, took us over bad ground and off a cliff. Broken to pieces it is, clicks and clicks from here. And nearly us with it."
"And lucky it is you've a seat at this table eating Jackman's eggs," said Ricard.
He was smiling, but his gaze was wary again.
"Though if you're on to Voteb, this is a strange place to find you."
"Oh, we're not going back to Voteb," Anakin said. "Our farm's dust and bones. Me and Yavid fought to wander until we found a new home."
Smoothly taking his cue, Obi-Wan smiled.
"Would there be a welcome for us here, Teeb Ricard, Teeb Jacqueline? We have money saved and want only to build a good life."
"Yes,"
Anakin said earnestly. "And truly, Yavid will shave off the beard."
Teeba Jacqueline glanced at Teeb Ricard.
"It's not ours to say entirely," she said, guarded.
"We've not so many here that you Teebs wouldn't shift the ground if you stayed. So it's a village thing to talk on."
Another glance at her fellow leader,
Best you sleep under this roof another night or so before you dream more of stopping. Give us time to get a good look at you.
That's fair, said Obi-Wan. But we'd not put you to trouble.
You're no trouble on the storeroom floor, said Teba Jacklin, shrugging.
Anakin swallowed a groan. The floor? Great.
Thank you, Teba.
There'll be thinking you need to do, said Ricard. We're miners in Torbel. Damatite. Tricky stuff. Men die, but there's no other work.
Work is work, said Obi-Wan, smoothing his beard. My cousin's young, but he knows how to sweat a full day. I'm not young, but I work hard, too. We could learn Damatite. Only, he frowned. When Markle and I left Lanteeb, there were rumors about it.
Not rumors, truth.
Ricard rubbed his scarred nose again.
Demand for Damatite started disappearing 3-4 seasons ago. A lot of mines closed, but not ours. Torbell's Damatite is the best, and what little need there is for it, we mostly supply. And now the government wants it too, as much as we can pull out of the ground and make safe for transport. Every week they send a droid convoy from the city to take what we produce.
A droid convoy? Said Anakin. No regular men?
Ricard shook his head.
It's not safe for men to ride the shipment so far. For the government, we take out only base impurities. Good as raw our damatite is for them.
Raw? Said Obi-Wan, pretending surprise. There's a use for it raw in the Confederacy?
They don't say why they want it, and we don't ask, said Teeb Ricard, brows lowered. It's the government. We send them damatite, they send us food and leave us alone to mine. To live. More, 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 that's all they say.
Anakin felt his belly heave, protesting the implications as well as Teba Jacklin's eggs. More, more, more meant Dooku and Durd planned to produce huge quantities of the bioweapon. And that meant the entire Republic was in danger. He imagined Padme writhing and dying like Bantina's lab rodent, and came close a second time to losing what little breakfast he'd eaten.
You've never asked why they suddenly want so much?
He knew he sounded critical, accusing, but he couldn't help it. Bad things happened because questions weren't asked, because people preferred to close their eyes and turn away.
You've never wondered what they're going to do with...
Ricard's fist thumped the kitchen table.
I don't care about that, Teeb Muckle. This village was dying. No future, no hope. All we have is Damatite. All we know is mining. But the Republic didn't care about that. The Republic didn't care about us. Every day, Teba Jacklin and me, we watched the children's faces growing thinner and thinner. And we knew we couldn't help them. We couldn't help ourselves. Almost nobody wanted our Damatite anymore. We were facing the end.
And then came word from Lanteeba City, said Teba Jacklin. From the government... They offered to help us. Food for Damatite. We said yes.
Teeb Ricard was still frowning.
This is how we live now, in Torbel. Almost every hour mining and cleaning Damatite. The government says when it has money again, we'll have money. Until then, we have food. I won't take food from a hungry child's mouth. If you're the kind of man who could do that, Teeb Markle, then Torbel is not the village for you. You and your cousin can find another...
No, no, said Obi-Wan hastily. Teeb Ricard, you mustn't have a care for Markle. His tongue rattles. Of course, you're mining the Damatite. Your people must eat. We have no quarrel with that. We have no quarrel with you.
He turned.
Well, shame, cousin, when these good people gave us shelter.
Blinking, Anakin stared at him.
I'm sorry, Yavid, I...
Obi-Wan cuffed the back of his head.
Don't apologize to me, Markle. Apologize to the Teeb and Teba, and then hope we are still welcome in Torbel.
Anakin dropped his gaze to the table.
I'm very sorry, I was wrong. Please, don't send us away.
Ricard,
Teba Jacklin took a light hold of the man's arm.
Let them stay. Let them earn their keep. Bowley's sick and Dam's over green, remember? And Brinny with his wrenched ankles, no use either. We're behind in the mining, and the convoy's only 3 days away. The government won't be pleased if the delivery is underweight.
They might not send food next time to punish us.
You're short-handed, said Obi-Wan, before Rickard can answer. Then please, let us help. You took us in, though we are strangers and times are hard. Let us work in the mine to earn our keep while we're here.
Rickard, this is a sensible plan, said Tiba Jacklin. You know it is. A man shows his true face while he's sweating. We'll feed and water and shelter these cousins, and they'll prove themselves in the mine, and then, after the convoy has come and gone, taking the right weight of mineral back to Lantipa, then we'll decide if they can remain in Torbel.
Teeb Rickard tapped his fingertips over the scars on his scalp, thinking.
It's a good argument, he said at last, if they're telling the truth. If they can learn fast and work hard.
We are, said Obi-Wan, and we can.
I think they're truthful, Rickard, said Tiba Jacklin, ignoring him.
But you're the Ed Miner. You'll know within an hour if they've lied. And if they've lied, we'll run them out.
Anakin glanced at Obi-Wan, feeling his tension, his concern.
We can't afford to get bogged down here. But at least if we stay another day or so, we can catch our breath, contact Yoda, maybe even come up with a plan to stop Durd before he launches his first attack. Or, if we can't do that, get off this dusty ball of dirt, come back with reinforcements, and end him.
The thought of seeing Lock Durd dead gave him an almost physical pleasure. Next to Grievous and Dooku, and of course the unknown Sith Lord behind all their troubles, Durd was his most hated enemy.
I'm coming for you, General. That cold shiver you feel is my breath on the back of your stinking neck.
He felt Obi-Wan's foot nudge him again. It was a warning, and an offering of comfort which meant he was forgiven his rash display of temper. Tiba Jacklin and Teeb Rickard, who'd been staring at each other in a kind of communal silence, nodded.
Yes, said Rickard. I agree. You're sure you can keep them here?
As I said in the storeroom, said the Tiba. Safest that way, I think.
Teeb Rickard raised a sparse eyebrow.
If we're thinking of safest, Jacklin, his hand covered hers, they'll be mining.
They'll be mining a few days at most, said Jacklin, frowning. I don't see that it's needful. There's such a thing as being too trusting, Rickard.
Every man is different under the ground, said Teeb Rickard. No man sickens the same, you know that. It would be wrong not to. Gone 3 years from Lanteeb, Jacklin. Gone soft they'll be. I won't have them on my conscience.
But Rickard, it's secret, she protested. It's ours.
And if they're living with us, it has to be theirs too, he said gently. No man or woman or child of Torbel remains in Torbel without it. This is our village rule.
They are not of our village.
Sighing, Teeb Rickard took hold of the Teeba's shoulder.
They are until they leave, Jacklin. I'm the Ed Miner. It's my final word.
And apparently Tiba Jacklin took that argument seriously, because she closed her eyes and sighed and nodded.
You are the Ed Miner,
she muttered, unhappy but acquiescent.
They'll have it.
Judging it safe to speak, Obi-Wan cleared his throat.
I'm sorry, my cousin and I will have what?
Casting him a dark look, Tiba Jacklin got up from the table, went to one of the kitchen cupboards, and from it withdrew a stoppered clay pot.
This is a secret, Teeb Yavid, she said, returning. It has been a secret for untold generations. It's not only mineral quality that brings the government to us first, and has it rewarding us with extra food and leaving us alone.
She unstoppered the pot, carefully tipped two large yellowish-brown pills onto the palm of one hand, and held them out.
It's because we work, and we work, and we don't hardly get green sick. No other mining village in Lanteeb can claim that. They don't know our secret. Not Chukba, not Envo, not Deben, not even Tran. It has always been for Torbel and no one else. If ever you speak of this to anyone not from our village, you will ruin us. There are desperate miners who'd kill for our secret. Do you understand that? Tiba, Jacqueline...
Obi-Wan stood, Anakin watching him, wondered how the two Lantibans could have no idea that a Jedi, one of the greatest ever born, was standing right in front of them.
Your trust won't be misplaced.
Obi-Wan's voice was quiet and thrumming with absolute sincerity.
Turned away from your village, Markle and I might have perished. I promise your secret is safe with us.
Anakin pushed his own chair back.
My cousin Yavid is the most honorable man I know. Never have I seen him do wrong or harm. Your secret is safe.
Tiba Jacqueline turned to Tiba Ricard.
I just hope you're right and there'll be no regretting and no way to take it back.
Obi-Wan rolled the pill she handed him between his thumb and forefinger.
What's in this?
You don't need to know, said Ricard. Swallow it and mine. Don't swallow it and leave. The choice is yours, Teebs. But choose quickly. We've a quota to fill.
Staring at his own pill, Anakin reached into the Force. He could sense no deception in either villager. It was highly unlikely this was an elaborate plot to poison them. He glanced at Obi-Wan, raised an eyebrow. The look Obi-Wan gave him was as loud as a shout.
Me first.
He wanted to argue. One of these days you'll have to stop protecting me. But he let it go, just this once. Watched Obi-Wan swallow the pill. When nothing happened, he swallowed his own. It tasted worse than the eggs. Teeb Ricard stood.
Come with me then, Teebs, since you've made your choice. The morning's getting away from us. It's time to start work.
Chapter 5. Following Teeb Ricard out of Tiba Jacqueline's cottage and into the empty street, Obi-Wan sank himself a little more deeply into the Force and reached out to touch the man's worried, vulnerable mind. Mired in the difficulties of keeping a dying village alive, of smiling and smiling while his heart cracked with despair, Ricard never noticed the stranger rummaging through his private emotions.
Teeb Ricard, you've a fine village here, he said quietly.
You and Tiba Jacqueline are to be admired for your stewardship of it. My cousin and I would like a wander through Torbell's streets before we bury ourselves underground in the mine. I think you can give us an hour or so to do that, can't you?
Teeb Ricard slowed, then stopped.
Well, yes. Yes, I can, he said uncertain. I can show you around myself if...
No, that's quite all right.
Keenly aware that they were standing in the middle of an open street, that at any moment they could be joined by other villagers, he pushed Ricard harder.
It's our own way we'll be finding, Teeb.
No need for Teeb, Ricard said. You're one of us now, Yavid.
The faintest cloud of confusion shadowed his eyes.
An hour and more to wander. I'm not sure I can...
Stang! The man's sense of responsibility was proving a real stumbling block. With no time for finesse, Obi-Wan clamped tight his hold on Ricard's mind.
No, you're quite sure. You're more than happy for us to look around. And we have your express permission to take as long as we need and see anything we wish.
Ricard shook his head, feeling the compulsion, unsettled by it but unable to resist.
Yes, yes, of course, Yavid. Anything.
We'd very much like to see your comm hub, Ricard.
Anakin added, stepping closer.
Where would we find it?
The Comub? Oh, that's in the Charter House.
Turning, Ricard pointed down the street toward the small village's center.
On the square.
Another puzzled headshake.
It's where we decide village things. Why do you...
Obi-Wan clasped the man's arm, reinforcing his control.
Thank you, Ricard. You're a good fella. Now, please, don't let us delay you any further.
I'll be on my way, Ricard murmured. Come to the mine when you're ready, Yavid. You and your cousin will be expected.
Think that'll hold? Said Anakin, as they watched Ricard walk away down the narrow, baked dirt street with its patches of worn-away ferrocrete.
As he passed the other cottages, doors opened and he was joined by villagers heading out to spend the day hewing raw damatite from deep underground. They stared at the two strangers, but whatever Ricard told the men and women seemed enough to satisfy, at least for now. If it doesn't hold, things could get a bit awkward, Obi-Wan said, frowning. Ricard was a genuinely good man, undeserving of such interference. But I don't have the luxury of being squeamish, Obi-Wan thought, then said, So, we must hope for the best. Now, let's get to that comm hub. The sooner Yoda knows what's going on, the sooner we can stop Durd. They collected more curious, not entirely friendly looks as they made their way to the village square. Every instinct screamed run, but they couldn't. They couldn't even walk fast. It was vital they do nothing to arouse the villagers' suspicions. Instead, they sauntered, not a care in the world, nodding and smiling at the faces staring at them from unshuttered windows and open front doors. As they caught up to, then passed, more miners on their way to work, they greeted the men and women with expansive geniality. Startled, the miners exchanged glances, but returned the greeting cordially enough. Though their ages ranged from middle teens to middle life, the look in every villager's eyes was the same. A sad, bone-deep weariness. Stang, Anakin muttered once it was safe to speak. I haven't felt a place this beaten down since Tatooine. Wonderful, Obi-Wan thought. The last thing he needed was Anakin brooding on his miserable, force-forsaken childhood home. It's true these people are faced with a bleak future, but there's nothing we can do to save them right now. Tell me, those pills Jacqueline gave us, what do you think, genuine or placebo? Anakin pulled a face. I think they taste worse than her eggs. The eggs weren't so bad, he said. Trust me, I've had worse. Really? Said Anakin, skeptical. Anyway, I think placebo. This isn't the only working mine on Lantib, and it would be if you needed those pills to handle raw damatite safely, and there wasn't anything about them in Agent Varric's briefing notes or Fairnan's data either. Perhaps, Obi-Wan said after a moment. But even if Jacqueline's claims are exaggerated, we should keep taking her pills. We can't afford to offend these people, not while we need to shelter here. Which hopefully won't be for long, Anakin muttered. I want back in the fight. We've been stuck on the sidelines too long. He couldn't argue with that, but even so. Patience, cousin. We must proceed with caution. One misstep and Ricard or Jacqueline could report us to the authorities. I know. Anakin poked at his right collarbone, wincing. Don't worry, I'll be careful. Sparking through the force, sharp flashes of pain. With every appearance of casual, cousinly affection, Obi-Wan let his hand drop to Anakin's shoulder and waited for the force to show him the problem. Stang. You've cracked it, he said. Best leave it alone. Anakin gave him an amused look. Obi-Wan Kenobi, master Jedi by day, secret healer by night. Mysterious, elusive, a shadow who... Very funny, he said and tightened his fingers just a little bit. Cousin Markle. Ow, okay, said Anakin, sliding away. Point taken, Yavid. He certainly hoped so. Anakin's fierce desire to defeat Durd might be admirable, but it could easily get them in trouble. For all his years of training, his recent war experience, and his newfound maturity, Anakin was still impetuous, too often ruled by emotion. Ahead of them stretched a line of long, low buildings. No windows in the back, just blank prefab walls and flat roofing. But before they could reach out with the force to test for trouble, they heard a low, grumbling growl. Halting, they turned to look along the nearby cross street. It was an old, dented ground car running on buckled wheel rims. Not a passenger vehicle, but a working machine. Cabin and broad, flat carry tray combined. Its finish was dull and pitted, its windscreen missing entirely. Seeing two strangers, the woman driving it started in surprise, then slowed to a stop beside them. Who are you? She demanded. She looked to be about Padme's age, maybe a year or two older, but far more weathered. One hand came off the ground car's control yoke and slipped down beside her as though she were reaching for a weapon. Obi-Wan stepped forward and bowed.
I am Yavid, once of Voteb. My young cousin, Markle, this is. We're staying with Teba Jacklin a few days.
Oh, said the woman.
Her reaching hand returned to the control yoke, and her gaze, running up and down Anakin, warmed in the way that often happened when they met up with females of quite a few persuasions.
Jacklin's hosting you.
She is, said Anakin. And we're to work in the mine later, all nodded at by Teba Ricard. You can ask.
The woman's dull brown hair was fastened in tiny knots, so it stood up on her skull like a Hasliki's bumpy hide and left her face open to scrutiny. She smiled, revealing stubby little teeth.
No need, Teep. Who comes here to Tor Bell to cause mischief?
Nobody I know.
I'm Devi. I mostly work the power plant. I'll see you both around and about, most like.
Devi, said Obi-Wan as the woman prepared to drive on.
The Charter House... Which way is it?
You want the Charter House? She was frowning again.
Why?
Teba Ricard directed us there, Anakin said smoothly, treating Devi to his most dazzling smile.
If you could tell us how to...
I'll do better, she said, melting anew.
I'll take you.
She jerked her thumb over her shoulder.
Climb on.
So they clambered onto the back of the ground car, and the woman, Devi, kicked the vehicle back into motion. Obi-Wan took advantage of their unexpected ride to slip once more beneath the surface of the Force, reaching out to feel for danger or a hint of what the future might hold. Beside him, Anakin followed suit. Good. Though his former apprentice's future sensing tended toward the erratic, an ongoing frustration, his ability to read the moment was formidable. And these days, with the dark side clouding the Force everywhere they turned, oftentimes, the moment was all the warning they had.
No alarm bells ringing, Anakin murmured under the ground car's grumble. You?
No, none.
He gave a pleased nod.
So far, so good.
As far as he could tell, theirs was the only ground car on the move. Devi slowed and turned left down the wide street that led, eventually, out of the village. They passed more men and a few women on foot, heading in the mine's direction. There were called greetings, lots of waving hands. Next, Devi turned right, and there was the square. More beaten soil, no precious water wasted on greenery or grass, and lining one side of it, a row of tiredly important buildings.
The Charter House, said Devi, pointing, is where I'll put you down, Teeps. It's testy Ricard gets when the power plant's unattended for long. Temperamental it is, I'm sorry to say.
The ground car rolled to a stop, and they eased themselves back to the street.
Thank you, Devi, said Anakin, smiling. You've been a great help.
She shrugged, feigning indifference.
There'll be no one in the Charter House this early, mind. You'll have to wait for Teba Brande to start her day and let you in.
We don't mind, said Anakin.
Being new here, we can look around until she comes. You have a fine village in Tor Bell.
We do, said Devi, dimpling.
Thinking to make it your home, are you?
You've guessed it, said Obi-Wan. If it turns out we suit each other.
Devi, thank you. Please don't let us make you late to the plant.
We'll see you again soon, I hope, Anakin added with all his charm.
You will,
she said. And with a jaunty wave and a delighted little smile of her own, left them beside the open square.
Come on, said Obi-Wan, ignoring Anakin's grin. We don't have all day.
The Charter House's once ornate but now shabby double doors were locked. Peering inside through one of the two front windows, Anakin nodded.
The comm hub's there. We need to get inside.
Well then, what are you wait? Footsteps warned them that more villagers were approaching. In perfect unison, they blurred themselves within the Force.
Right, said Anakin once it was safe to speak. One break and enter coming up.
Watching Anakin manipulate the door's tumble locks, Obi-Wan smothered a smile. Sometimes he thought his former apprentice would never outgrow his childish delight at playing with the Force, using it to juggle fruit, pluck a comrade's lightsaber from her belt, float his precious little astromech droid upside down around a hangar bay, or, in this case, unlock a door. Hardly the proper use of Jedi powers, but he'd long since given up protesting. Anakin would have his fun regardless. And besides, In these trying times, it felt churlish to deny him a fleeting moment of levity. The locked doors yielded. They slipped inside and found a modest room with a table and chairs ranged around it. Shelves stacked with folders of flimsies and more faded flimsies pinned to a notice board on the right-hand wall. The comm equipment, ranged against the back wall, appeared ominously old-fashioned. Anakin scowled. I have a bad feeling about this. Now who's the pessimist? He said, raising an eyebrow. Come on, let's take a closer look.
It's no good, Anakin said at last, frustrated. This thing's useless. Junk. No way does it have enough juice to punch a signal straight through to Coruscant. I'd say it practically fries its innards trying to reach the city.
His fist struck the wall.
Stang!
Arms folded, Obi-Wan sighed. Now, Anakin, let's not admit defeat quite so quickly. Surely we can do what we did before and piggyback our signal onto an outgoing Separatist comm. I realize it won't be easy given our distance from Lantiba, but it is doable. Anakin thought about it, then shook his head.
Even if we manage to find the right signal to piggyback, I don't think this antique's got the power to maintain the connection all the way home. And if I boost its output, I'll probably blow the hub. Besides, I don't fancy pulling my lightsaber apart, not when it's the only weapon I've got.
Obi-Wan tugged at his beard.
Do we know for certain that hooking a dyadium power cell into the hub will burn out the equipment?
Obi-Wan, come on, Anakin retorted. Look at it. This hub gives antiques a bad name. There's a better than even chance it won't survive a dyadium boost. Are you willing to risk it?
No, he wasn't willing. Not only because they might need the comm hub later on, but because the loss of such vital equipment on the heels of two strangers appearing on their doorstep would inevitably raise the villagers' suspicions.
We'll have to stow ourselves on board the Damatite convoy, he said, not at all pleased by the prospect. Let it take us back to the city. With luck, we can hole up in our previous palatial residence and contact Yoda from there.
Anakin groaned. Except that means 3 more days stuck here.
Obi-Wan, in 3 days, Durd could be ready to launch his first attack.
He gave Anakin his steadiest look. I'm aware of that. But even if we were to head back to Lantiba right now, on foot, it would take us longer than 3 days to get there. And with no food or water or hope of scrounging enough supplies.
Then we can steal a ground car.
Anakin, think, he said, exasperated. Torbell's ground cars are 1 pothole away from disintegration. Not to mention the fact that Jacqueline and Ricard would raise the alarm 5 minutes after we'd made our getaway.
Anakin was scowling again.
Not if we smash this comm hub, they wouldn't.
Anakin, you're still not thinking. All that would do is delay the inevitable. They'd tell the droid in charge of the convoy, and it would raise the alarm.
Now, do take a deep breath and steady yourself. You're acting like a wet-behind-the-ears Padawan instead of a...
Well, excuse me for not having ice water in my veins, Anakin retorted.
I'm not like you, Obi-Wan. I can't snap my fingers and turn myself to stone.
Astonished, Obi-Wan stared at him.
If we don't get out of here soon, people are going to die, said Anakin, furiously pacing. While we're twiddling our thumbs in sunny Torbell, Dooku's going to order a strike using that bioweapon, and hundreds, maybe thousands of innocent people are going to die.
And if there was one thing Anakin found utterly intolerable, it was the thought that a single soul might perish because he reached them too late, did too little to save them, and not soon enough. He'd always been obsessed about that. But ever since Shmi...
You don't know that, he said gently.
Not for certain.
I know it's possible, Obi-Wan, said Anakin. Even probable.
Perhaps, he admitted. But Anakin, our options are severely limited. We can't risk getting caught. Our best chance of stopping Dooku and Durd is biding our time here until the convoy comes.
3 days, said Anakin, turning away. You know as well as I do how much can go wrong in 3 days.
And you know the price that's paid for acting too soon, for rushing in without a thought for the consequences. You know the price, Anakin, better than anyone.
Time spun backward for both of them. A racing gunship, enemy blaster fire exploding indiscriminately, terror and fury and grief burning through the Force.
I can't take Dooku alone. I need you. If we catch him, we can stop this war right now.
But Anakin hadn't listened. Heedless, intemperate passion getting the best of him, he'd rushed to challenge Dooku. And where had that left them? With not just an arm lost, but the chance to avoid years of bloodshed and destruction ruined.
What?
Anakin, shocked, sounding so young, took a step backward, bumped into the hub equipment, jarring his hurt shoulder, and flinched.
Obi-Wan!
What he'd said was a savage truth, one he'd never thrown in Anakin's face, until now.
I'm sorry, he said swiftly, but Anakin, I was right then and I'm right now. No matter how hard it is, no matter our feelings, we must wait. I need you to wait.
Anakin stared at him, and then, after a long pause, he nodded.
I know.
Obi-Wan folded his arms, relieved.
Good.
A flash of temper, like a fire's dying sparks. No, it's not good. It's necessary. They aren't the same thing.
You're right, they're not.
He unfolded his arms. And now we should go before we're discovered here. But first, let me see to your shoulder. It was equal parts peace offering and practicality. Anakin needed full mobility, but he needed to make things right between them. Not just because they were in serious trouble and couldn't afford the tension, but because
I hurt him. And while it was needful, I am truly sorry.
Anakin looked at him, suspicious, his resentment lingering.
Thought you said we had to stay bruised.
Bruised is one thing, but should that bone break, we'll be at a distinct disadvantage.
Fine, Anakin muttered. Then fix it.
The crack in Anakin's collarbone was just tricky enough that mending it cost him something, which was good. Penance that came easily was no penance at all.
Thanks, said Anakin when it was done, and swung his arm in wide, experimental circles.
And then came a tentative smile, temper forgotten.
I appreciate it.
So mercurial.
You're welcome,
Obi-Wan said, very proper and reserved. Just be careful. No sudden movements or lifting anything heavy until tomorrow.
Anakin nodded. I can do that.
Well, yes, I know you can. The question is, will you?
Nag, 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 said Anakin with a flashing grin. Stop fussing, I'll be fine.
Obi-Wan gave up. Before we track down Teeb Rikard, I'd like to continue looking around the village. I'm not comfortable with disappearing underground until I know what's on top of it.
Agreed, said Anakin, although I'm still not picking up any immediate danger.
Neither am I, but let's not get complacent. There's no fancy ground car for you to tinker with this time.
Anakin gave him a look. You really don't get tired of being right, do you?
No, I really don't, he said. Now, shall we go? Our brand new career awaits.
Every time Bantina turned around, she almost fell over a battle droid.
Thanks to Locke Dird and his near-hysterical paranoia, her new laboratory was crowded with the clankers, skinny and silent, and armed with blasters that would reduce her to splintered bone and splattered blood in a heartbeat. She couldn't even take a meal without them.
They never called her by name. They never said, Dr. Fernan, turn left, or Dr. Fernan, turn right, or Dr. Fernan, put your hands behind your head, before they searched her body each morning and night with a variety of scanners and sensors. They never called her anything but you.
That was Dird's doing, too. She was sure of it. She knew enough about droids to know they could be programmed with any amount of personal information about a human. Calling her you was a deliberate ploy on the Nymoidian's part to keep her craven and docile.
What an idiot he is. If I weren't Bantina Fernan, he'd have no bioweapon out of me.
But since she was Bantina Fernan, and all her friends and family but one were relying on her to keep them alive, then of course he'd get the precious, monstrous bioweapon he was forcing her to make. Just as soon as she worked out how to stop the toxin breaking down when more than half a beakerful was manufactured.